Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
A binge-worthy show about Jesus? The Chosen Season 3 is here. Come and see what the buzz is about. The Chosen explores the imperfect and messy relationships of real humans following Jesus. The first 6 episodes are available now. Stream each new episode for free. Plus, watch exclusive content like The After Show, only in the new Chosen app. Download the Chosen app on mobile and TV streaming devices. Visit BingeJesus.com to learn more.
Hey, MEAC fans, it's time to step into a championship. The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the MEAC action with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
Welcome to the Fantrax Toolshed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From dynasty to prospects to redraft, we got you covered. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clay.
All right, fantasy baseball fanatics around the world, welcome to the Toolshed. This is episode 98 of the Fantrax Toolshed with Clayton Cross, powered by Fantrax and FantraxHQ.com. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have a really, really fun episode in store today with a great guest. But with me, as always, my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, what's going on, man?
I'm going to put my Twitter name as like 80 grade co-host because I've actually some people have actually picked up on that and they've started like when they send me a DM or something, I say, hey, Mr. 80 grade. So I'm just going to make that my Twitter name because it's pretty cool. I like
do it.
Yeah,
it's probably available.
I'm sure. No. I'm going to leave my handle the same. I just do like, you know, you can change like your name.
Oh, your name. OK, I got you.
Yeah. So That's a great intro. I always appreciate it. It makes me feel good before we start the show.
I gotta get you off on a, you know, get start off on a high note, right? Get everybody feeling good, feeling great to talk some baseball. It could be a bad day and I would still talk baseball because we love this game so much more than the commissioner does. So,
well, yeah, but say we're basically living in bad days because we don't have baseball and we're still talking about it. So, you know, they're, as we're recording, they're supposedly meeting right now, but we'll see how it goes.
I'm waiting until, like, you know, the T's are crossed, the I's are dotted, people are signing their names or whatever. You know, I'm not buying into any reports I hear anymore after that whole, like, oh, they're close, let's do it tomorrow type of thing. Yeah.
No point in listening to the junk. We'll just wait for it to be done. And I think it's going to get wild. It's going to be crazy because, you know, last night, seeing all the trade rumors is weird. Like the Brian Reynolds trade rumors to Miami, like, okay, so I didn't acknowledge, like, I guess I missed it that organizations could still talk trades. So how many trades do you think are done that are just like, when the lockout ends, it's going to be just like, they're going to be calling these guys like, hey, you're heading to Miami, you're heading to San Francisco. Like, it's going to be pretty wild, but
it's going to be full on pandemonium.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. Hopefully that is sooner rather than later, because we already missed the first two series of the year. Don't want to miss any more than that, but now we bring on our fantastic guest. This is a man that probably breaks down more pitchers than anyone on the entire planet Earth. My sources tell me that his first word as a baby was slider, and that for show and tell in elementary school, he gave a breakdown of CSW. A man that would rather say good things about fantasy football than swear on a podcast. The face of pitcher list, Mr. Nick Pollock joins us today. Nick, thanks for coming on, man. How are you?
Oh my God, that was amazing. What is happening? This is I guess I would rather say nice things about fantasy football. I was drinking out my fantasy football stupid mug earlier today.
Which is a great mug.
It's, you know, I'd rather say good things about that. Yeah, no cursing, right, guys? We don't do this here.
I don't,
wonderful.
I've never cursed on a podcast. So it's,
see, exactly. Chris gets it.
Yeah, I get
Chris
you.
Gets it. But yeah, I will say I can't wait for that day of pandemonium. Because it also means I stopped doing the daily going deeps, which are fun.
You love them.
Take a lot of time. and there are a lot of things to do. So I'll be excited to be like, the project is complete and we have baseball again. And oh, there's so much to talk about. There's so many things. There's so many storylines that we just don't know what's going to happen. And I can't wait to watch it all unfold.
I can't wait either. And I got to mention too, you know, congrats to you and Alex and the entire pitcherless team on your FSWA award for podcast of the year. I could listen to you and Alex all day.
Oh man, that's
talk baseball. So congratulations, and congrats on the new, on, you know, 7.0 website too. Like, it's, your website was already, I don't know how you guys keep raising the bar on your website. Like every year I'm like, all right, they can't get better than this. And then you guys do. So yeah, it's phenomenal websites, and congratulations on all of that.
Well, thank you so much, Eric, for those kind words. Not necessary whatsoever. I will say this website is kind of like, we're trying to plateau now. We're not trying to do so much more for the next one. It's pretty much me always trying to take the steps to something like this, since it was Pitcher Gifts. But with the podcast stuff, I mean, I just gotta say, Adam Howe, man. Him stepping into the podcast manager role there has been absurdly cool. And I think they only gave us that award because Sleeper in the Bust and Rates and Barrels won it the previous 2 years. So someone else needs to get it. And it was either Circling the Bases or us. It was like, coin flip, you know, and we were fortunate enough to get it. But thanks a lot, guys. I'm excited to be here. I mean, you guys do amazing work with us, too. And I'm sure one day you guys will be, you know, on there as well.
You're too humble. You guys absolutely deserved it. Your team is just phenomenal all the way around, top to bottom. So many great writers.
On the shoulders of giants, okay?
So many great writers and podcasters and behind the scenes. You know, it's really been fun to watch Pitcherless grow into the behemoth it is now. From,
oof.
You know, I've known you and Alex for the last, you know, handful of years now. I think I met both of you first time back in, I think it was First Pitch 2019.
I think that's right. Yeah, you were in Arizona then.
Yeah, I remember meeting out, talking with Alex for the first time and getting that picture of him and Mason cuddling out there. the infamous times. Picture that I took. I will take photo credit for that.
I have the picture of the picture.
You have a picture of the picture?
Yes, of taking the photo. I have that. So I have the photo of you taking the photo, I think.
Nice.
I'm really proud of it.
Hanging in the lube. That's But we do have a lot of fun stuff to talk about today. Obviously, we would talk about pitchers with Nick Pollock in the house here. And we're talking some breakouts, some really young, intriguing arms that could break out this year. We have a lot of names to get to. But before we get to that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us all on Twitter. Nick is obviously at Pitcher List. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. And our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. If you enjoyed this podcast or any of the Pitcher List podcasts, please rate and review. Drop the 5-star on there. Those always help. Check out our Patreon, which is patreon.com/FantraxToolshed for extra content from both Chris and I. And of course, check out all the other great work we have on the Fantrax HQ network, including our 2022 draft kit. But enough of that. Let's get right into it today. We're going to go like kind of division by division. And we'll break it down a little bit here. We'll start with the National League and then do the American League after the break. Let's start in the NL East. And a guy that already kind of broke out, or not kind of, did break out second half of last season. I want to see what your thoughts are on Ranger Suarez here, Nick. Over, he had 27 relief appearances, 12 starts, 1.36 ERA in 106 innings, 25.6% strikeout rate, 7.9% walk rate, and even 1.00 whip. Are you buying the breakout that you saw in 2021 here in 2022?
So I have a phrase on the site called a Vargas rule, which is where there's a pitcher who we don't really think is anything exceptional, goes on a run that is exceptional. And in your fantasy leagues, you're thinking, okay, I would normally drop this guy, but I can't because he's been doing so well that I just keep starting him until he hits the wall. And I don't want to say that that's exactly what Ranger Suarez did, but it's actually kind of funny because he has a repertoire very similar to what Jason Vargas had when he was on that run with the Royals, of a changeup that has a 20% swing strike rate and then just fastballs that aren't getting destroyed. And so I watched a lot of Ranger Suarez from last year. You know, there's been a lot of debate about this one. I remember seeing, I think, Ranger Suarez inside the top 180 in ADP and early draft champions and NFBC stuff. I thought, this is kind of a little too much. So I really went into it. And yeah, that's really what happened. Ranger Suarez avoided getting, you know, allowing the long ball. He allowed one home run on 1,100 fastballs thrown last year, which is absolutely insane. You just don't do that. And even if you add in, okay, say, hey, there's some extra home runs that happen, fine. It's still like a 3.3 ERA, Nick. Adding more home runs, it's more complicated than that. How many guys are on base, and how does it affect the rest of the start? Your rhythm, your confidence goes out. It changes a ton just adding home runs to those pitches. But it's even more than that. The slider is this weird, maybe I'm going to get a strike pitch, but it's only a 52% strike offering. So it's really sinker, four-seamer, changeup. And I don't really want to buy into that so much. The changeup had a sub 60% strike rate last year. Generally, a 60% is the bare minimum I'm looking for when it comes to a number two pitch. But really, you want like a 65% plus to say that, yes, he's going to maintain a sub 8% walk rate. I don't really love the fact that the changeup doesn't get enough strikes, and then the slider certainly doesn't either. So it's four-seam or sinker. I don't really think either one of those is super exceptional. I would say the sinker is all right. He does a good job of commanding that arm side and down really well. But that was, again, in that sample of last year. I think Ranger Suarez is fine. He's not necessarily bad. I would, you know, have him on a 12-teamer if it was like my last round pick or something like that. But I'm not going to go and get him in the 16th, 17th round. I think that's just hoping for too much out of Ranger Suarez this year. And I'm sure he's going to have like a month or two of great starts, you know? Like, he faced really bad teams last year and took advantage of them. He can do the same probably this year, but for the full season, I don't want to chase Ranger Suarez.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. Like, I'm not quite... Like, originally, I saw the ADP, and I was like 100% out. I think it's dropped to slightly more reasonable levels, so still pretty high. But yeah, for a lot of the reasons you just said, you know, I just can't see him maintaining. Like, yeah, he still had a two, you know, mid two, you know, X ERA and all the ERA indicators, and did a great job limiting hard contact well. But you mentioned, yeah, the one home run allowed on fastballs is, that's just not sustainable. That's just not sustainable. So, and doesn't really miss bats at a high clip. Yeah, the changeup had a near 40% whiff rate, but he's never going to be a big K rate guy. Probably see a lot of ERA regression back to, you know, in the mid threes, probably something like that. So yeah, I'm still not buying him, but not quite as egregious as it was in early on draft season. But yeah, I'm still pretty much out on Suarez at this point. How about you, Chris?
Yeah, everybody wants to go in sight. Well, he was good as a starter. Yeah, he was great. He had a 1.51 ERA as a starter down the stretch over 65 innings. But as you said, like, you know, how much of it was a fluky hot stretch? And that happens all the time where we see, you know, pitchers just get hot and they just run with it. And I really think that's what happened here. You know, I like Suarez, but not enough to draft him where he's going. You know, if he was going like post 250, like, then maybe I can consider that. But, you know, right now I'm not on board with the price, and I just think there's so much potential regression here. And who's to say he doesn't go back to the bullpen? Like, yeah, I mean, his run as a starter was amazing, but is there a guarantee that he sticks as a starter? I'm not totally sure. Maybe I'm off base on that, but to add on everything,
the Phillies need help.
That's true.
I mean, I will say that, like, Eflin, you know, I haven't really been considering Zach Eflin a ton, and I'm actually starting to again because his return was supposed to be May, and I'm personally expecting May 1st. For when we get baseball again. Actually, I'm kind of upset I didn't draft him in Libra last night. I'm saying this out loud, but I with Eflin back, then right now Suarez would be the number 4.
Yeah.
He would be the 4 or 5, but there's no one else. There's really no one else. Like, right now it's Hans Kraus as number 5 if this season started with Eflin hurt, and that's just bad. So Suarez is likely going to stick in there, but
yeah,
I mean, I'm with you on like the hot street stuff, man. Like, it happens all, like, every season. We also have Cal Quantrill as sub 2 ERA to end the year, but everyone has accepted him as the Derek Rodriguez, you know. Like, he had a good season of ERA, but we don't trust this whatsoever. Same with Chris Flexen. So I'm not buying this.
All right, moving over to Chris's Atlanta Braves here. Huascar Ynoa had a pretty solid season last year. A little bit up and down, but ended with a 4.05 ERA, 111 whip, 100 Ks in 91 innings for a near 27% strikeout rate. Walk rate was a tick under 7% overall. So pretty good, you know, kind of first season here for the 23-year-old Huascar Ynoa. What are your thoughts here on him, Nick? Do you think he can take that next step and kind of establish himself as, you know, a kind of a nice mid-rotation guy behind Anderson and Morton down there?
So there's been a lot of talk about being a two-pitch pitcher in the majors and what that means, right? And I think we've accepted that you can be successful as a two-pitch pitcher. And my philosophy has always been you need three pitches. One, a fastball that does not get crushed. Two, a secondary pitch you can throw for strikes. And three, a secondary pitch you can throw for whiffs. Sometimes, or just any pitch you can throw for whiffs, rather. Sometimes two of those are actually one pitch, and that is, you know, a slider. He throws it for strikes and gets it for whiffs, and it's amazing. It's filthy. Threw about 50% of the time last year. It gets the 8th most vertical drop of any slider in the majors among starting pitchers, which is excellent. Now, the fastball gets crushed a lot. We're talking like a 40% hard hitter PA. And generally, you want to see with like a four-seamer, if it's underneath 30%, you're like, yes, okay, this is all right. We can deal with this. 40% is, oh no. That's really, really, really bad. And it's crazy because he throws 96, 97. And Ynoa sometimes can command it. There's some beautiful GIFs out there of him throwing like 98 on the outside corner with this. It's just, it's just beautiful. And then all of a sudden he allows a home run to Eric Hosmer, of all people. It's like, how did you allow this? So it's annoying. I think it's a VAA thing, vertical approach angle. If you're not familiar with that, essentially, if you're coming at a high angle with a fastball, makes it easier to go into the bat path of the hitter. So when you're swinging, you always have a slight uppercut. And if you have a high enough angle, that means that the ball is going in along that travel of the bat. And Noah does that a little bit, which makes the four-seamer easier to hit. So that's a problem. And there is a changeup at 10% rate, of a 10% rate that could theoretically develop. But I don't really expect there to be so much more change from Noah. I will say this. Before his injury of slapping his hand onto a bench, and slapping is very generous, what he actually did, it was a 3.09 ERA with a 1.05 whip, right, in those 8 starts. And then afterwards, it was, 5.05 ERA with a 1.14 whip. My whole thing, though, is that it actually wasn't so bad. 5.05 ERA, yes, but still a 26% strikeout rate, still a 1.14 whip. 30% overall CSW, just a 7% walk rate. And he actually limited his hard contact overall to just 26% per plate appearance, which is fine. It's not exceptional, but it's fine. only had a 65% left on base rate after, which is very low, and we expect that to get better, closer to 75%. All I'm trying to say is they allowed too many home runs, still had a really good whip, still a lot of strikeouts. I'm a fan of Wascarino because I don't think he's that post-injury self of a 5.05 ERA. I think he's like a 3.8 or so with a good whip, like one that will actually help you, and a lot of strikeouts along the way. Atlanta needs him as a starter right now. He's going to be starting throughout. The slider is just that good that it's going to keep those strikeouts flowing and keep that whip down. And hopefully he goes on a good enough stretch where the fastball doesn't get demolished constantly. So I'm a fan of this, especially if you find yourself not necessarily finding that many strikeouts earlier on in your draft.
Yeah, I'm kind of a fan. I'm warming up to, he did give up those 14 home runs, like you mentioned, and the four-seamer had a 254 batting average against, 529 slug, 361 wOBA, but like you said, the slider is phenomenal. Near 40% whiff rate, 208 batting average against, 335 slugging against. Changeup was very good as well, 42.9% whiff rate on that. So I like that he can miss bats with both of those offerings. But yeah, to your point, like that fastball command, like, yeah, he could dot it sometimes, but you look at the heat map on the fastball and it's kind of all over the place in the zone. So a little bit of improvement there. I think he could definitely take that next step. And I don't think there's really necessarily a big gap between him and like an Ian Anderson long-term. I think they could be pretty close. I like Anderson more. I will say that, but I don't think it's necessarily gonna be a huge gap between the two. So I'm kind of buying into, if that fastball can improve.
This is weird because they're like they're completely different, right? Like right. Ian Anderson does not have an overwhelming pitch like Noah does, but none of his pitches get crushed like Noah's fastball, right?
Right.
It's a completely different approach, and I kind of buy into what Anderson does. I think he's just super hard to hit, and I think over time he's just going to get better at throwing more pitches in the zone and realizing, oh, this is fine. This is okay. And I think Ian Anderson actually has a really nice 2022 ahead. I'm curious to see how both of them pan out.
Me too. Yeah, I like both arms. Yes, I like Anderson more, but I think Noah could be a nice arm as well. Chris, being the resident Braves fan in the house here, what are your thoughts on Noah? How confident are you that he can take that next step this year?
Well, looking at the heat map was what I was going to mention. The location's bad, but then you break it down looking at the home runs just on the four seam, majority of them were left like right over the heart of the plate. And the velo wasn't good on those, interestingly enough. So the one to Hosmer was actually 97.1, but he grooved it right over the middle. So Hosmer destroyed it. The other one's 93.8, 96.8 to Abysel Garcia, 94, 95. So I guess not all bad, but there's a couple that are like the one to Brandon Nimmo, 93.9, just left in bad places that were easy to hit. Now he did, Adam Duvall hit one off of him. I guess he was still with the Marlins that was, low and away that somehow he got a hold of, and it was up to almost 98. But overall, I think it's just a slight command problem with the fastball. And you mentioned the slider is really good. And I think that's what's the best thing to do for him. Throw your best pitch the most often. And that's what most pitchers should do. And we saw that with like Denelson Lamet before 2020, where he began to throw that slider more often than any other pitch because it was his best pitch. So maybe this is a thing where I don't know how much more you can throw the slider when you're throwing it 48% of the time. But, at least he's throwing it the majority of the time and we're not seeing the four seam above it. So
right,
it'll be interesting. I don't know. But I think if he can just command the fastball a little better, it's interesting to see like,
step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Most of the home runs were not on like, average like fastball velo. It was either like low end or high end. So I don't know if it's just struggling with command there when he's trying to groove it or what. But yeah, he'll be interesting to watch. And I'm kind of neutral on him. Don't love him. Don't hate him. But yeah, he'd be worth monitoring this year.
I don't know. He could probably – who's the reliever that throws a slider like 70% of the time? Is it Diego Castillo? Or so? Yeah, I think it was Diego Castillo. Saying, yeah.
Who knows? About relievers, man.
I know. It's a reliever.
I'm out of here.
You can always increase that slider usage if he likes it enough. But this next name on the list is actually one of the names I was most interested in getting Nick's take on. You know, we've talked about this arm a lot on this podcast over the last couple of years. I've written him up over on Fantrax HQ, and that's Jesus Luzardo, who had just overall an atrocious 2021 season. It was only 38 innings, but 6.87 ERA, 163 WHIP. His WHIP was basically what Ranger Suarez's ERA was this past year, or even a little bit higher. But you know, he still has the premium velocity from the left side. Has two pitches he can miss bats with this curveball. And the changeup curveball was actually one of the best curveballs in baseball last year. But both the sinker and the four-seamer just get hit way too hard, way too often. So that's an issue. But hey, new team, fresh start. Miami's been pretty good lately in pitching development, so could be a good spot for him. But Nick, what are your thoughts on Luzardo this year? Are you still a believer that he can turn into a solid arm?
This is not supposed to be a plug. But one thing about the news site I've been dying to see for ages, and I wish I kind of saw before last year, were strike percentages on pitches and just understanding the flow of their repertoire and how they work. Because things changed, and we can kind of see beforehand. He was throwing this four-seamer, you know, 17% of the time, but only getting a 60% strike rate in 2020. And then that fell to 59% as he threw it about a third of the time. That's really bad. When you're throwing a four-seamer, you want to have 65 to 70%. Like the elite ones of Kevin Gausman, that's at 74% strike rate. That means you're throwing your pitch and you're getting strikes, and that's a good thing. Sure, you can say, well, he gets hit hard or whatever, so maybe he doesn't want to do that. Well, that was a problem too with Luzardo, as he was a 59% strike rate, and then he allowed a 364 average on the pitch. So it's a bad fastball right now. I don't know why exactly it is that way. Maybe it's just bad command. Maybe it's just very easy to hit for whatever reason. And the sinker dropped 10 points in strike rate this past year from 67 to 57. I mean, that's just not good. Good news. And the thing that makes me interested a little bit in Jesus Luzardo is that once he went to Miami, he started to have these starts where he pushed up his curveball and changeup a ton. And the curveball, 50% strike rate in 2020 to 65%. In 2021, as you mentioned, Eric, an elite curveball, 35% CSW, 22% swing strike rate is insanely good. Limited batters to a sub 200 average. Changeup, he threw 20% of the time, 18% hard hit per PA, which is really good. You're happy to see that, 63% strike rate. And those two pitches, to me, if he combines for about 60% of his offerings, if not more, with curveballs and changeups, we could be seeing some fun stuff. And guess what? At the end of the year, and I know it's not something that you should put any weight in, but the last start of the season for Jesus Luzardo was 11 strikeouts against the Phillies with one earned run in 5.1 innings. And what did he do? Only 24% four-seamers and 44% curveballs, 38 thrown in that game, and he had a ton of success with it. I think there's something to be said about that. For Jesus Luzardo. And I will say, too, also, the four-seamer actually returned 48% CSW in that one by throwing it less, and he earned whiffs on it because it was more of a surprise pitch. There could be something to that. I'm not saying that he's all of a sudden now going to be an absolute ace or anything close to it, but when it comes to pitchers that I'm looking at early in the season, Jesus Luzardo is a part of that list because I want to see if that approach change is legitimate and if you'll actually be pulling back that four-seamer. Just as you mentioned, Chris, throw that worst pitch less. Both, though, I want fewer sinkers. Get that. Just don't even throw the sinker. It's terrible. It doesn't do anything good for you. The four-seamer is where there is potential. And if he just becomes a curveball changeup guy with the surprise four-seamer, Luzardo could do something cool.
I like that. Yep. I'm still, I just got Luzardo literally 2 minutes ago in TGFBI. And I think I have pick. like a, It was near 300.
I didn't want to hear a 2 in the first number, by the way. So I'm glad you're saying 300 something.
Yeah, it was. I think it was in the low 300. But that's like, okay, I have like a 70%+ share percentage of him. I gave him an almost every league this year. Yeah, it's like where he's going, you know, in the 330-ish ADP range. Sure. I'm all over that. He's got more upside than a lot of the arms in that range.
I will say, be ready to drop him, right? It's part of this list of me like the early drops of I'm okay drafting him, but I want to see if that approach is sticking in the first or second week. If it's not, it's going to be hard to keep him on your bench while you have all these other exciting guys doing new things. Go after the new things if Luzardo has not shifted into what we saw in September.
For sure. Yep. I can totally see that. Now, Chris, I know we've already talked about Luzardo a bunch, but what are your quick thoughts here on Luzardo?
Yeah, I've loved him since his prospect days. I mean, he was an elite prospect and we saw what he was capable of. Obviously, pitching against major league hitters is a totally different caliber, but you're right. I think that there's something to that. You were exactly on with the pitch mix change down the stretch. The last start was masterful. And so hopefully we do see that stick. I'd love to see the four seam usage, you know, dip below the curve and maybe even the changeup. And I think with the way Miami has developed changeups with other pitchers, that'll be something to watch. Like, what does this changeup look like coming into the season? Could be huge for him, but the curveball is elite and he needs to stick with that pitch, throw it the most often, and just use the fastball when he needs to and work on pinpointing that pitch, because it's not, hasn't been great, but hopefully pulling that back can really help him out in the long run. So yeah, the draft cost, I don't see why you wouldn't take him. There's no one in that range that I think has as much upside as he does.
Totally agree. All right, last name in the National League East here, a guy that I wrote up as a sleeper for 2022 that you can get super late in your drafts. That's Josiah Gray from the Washington Nationals, a guy that will definitely have a rotation spot this year, as he's currently projected as number 3 arm behind the always shaky Steven Strasburg and Patrick Corbin. So he's going to have a spot in that rotation. And last year was pretty impressive in his debut. You might not have seen that in the ERA or anything like that, but he had a whiff rate above 45% on 2 pitches. Very small sample size, obviously, but this is a guy that had a very solid minor league career, was one of the top pitching prospects in baseball coming up through the Cincinnati and the Los Angeles Dodgers organization. So I think there's a lot of pieces here that have a nice breakout season this year. Nick, are you buying into Josiah Gray?
I have so many thoughts on Josiah Gray, and I'm very sorry for the amount of time I'm about to take up.
All good, man.
I will say, it might surprise you, that I prefer Steven Strasburg at the end of my drafts than Josiah Gray.
I would agree with that.
It's a very simple reason. I am structured for 12-teamers, just so we're clear here, but you have to understand the in-season strategy of the end of your draft and what it means, like just talking about with Luzardo, of what it means drafting a player. It essentially is, I want to trust him and see what he's doing early on. I don't think we'll have a decision made or verdict on Josiah Gray's foreseeable future in April. I kind of want to buy into Josiah Gray starting June 1st or July 1st and then for the second half. And I think with Strasburg, we'll know right away if that velocity is back, if he's in any way close to the guy he was before. And if he's not, he's not. And then you just move on to the next guy, because both of them are going to go very late in your drafts. So with Josiah Gray, I was a huge fan last year. I essentially jumped on him everywhere because he went to Washington where, great, he's going to just pitch forever now. I do have some questions. Eno brought up a really good point when we talked yesterday. The Washington Nationals don't have a great history of development in the majors. And that could be a question mark for Josiah Gray, as the curveball and slider are both legit pitches. I mean, they had massive swing strike rate pitches. I think the curveball is a little bit more dependable overall, 21% swing strike rate for that one, 24% for the slider. Slider actually had a higher strike rate, 66%. Maybe I'm confusing the two, the slide and the curveball right now. but essentially, one of the breakers is better than the other at being more of a consistent pitch. But nevertheless, both are there and could get double-digit whiffs in a given night. That's awesome. The big concern is the four-seamer, because it can get double-digit whiffs. And I wouldn't be surprised if he succeeds so much in the minors, because he could just kind of throw it and without amazing command and batters still couldn't hit it. But now in the majors, batters are hitting it a little bit easier, and he got trounced. He got trounced by the Phillies, the Mets, the Pirates, rocky road. Okay, it was a terrible, terrible September. He had poor command. And then he rebounded against the Marlins, and I watched that start because I really wanted to see, is this someone who really, you know, came around and figured things out? He didn't. If you go and watch that outing, you'll see a guy who was not making stellar pitches constantly, who's trying to find strikes, laboring through at-bats, and getting lucky on this one, lucky on that one. And I think that's going to be the story of Josiah Gray a good amount. There are going to be these moments where he really just shines. 10 strikeouts against your Atlanta Braves, Chris. But it's going to be back and forth. And unless I see his fastball really excelling in April and think, oh man, this guy has it down. He's attacking the right way, getting the early strikes with his breakers to even set up a two-strike fastball up if he wanted. Really feeling like he's not battling himself but battling the batter. Once that change happens, Josiah Gray is going to soar. But I don't believe it will happen in April. And I don't believe it's going to even happen in May. It could not even happen this season. And that makes it really tough as a fantasy manager because I won't know what to do with Josiah Gray. So I'm kind of out for that reason. And it stinks. I'm so in for 2023 because I know this is a prospect thing, right? I'm in for 2023, guys. And I wouldn't give him up in a dynasty. But if I'm in a win right now, I find it kind of tough to buy in on Josiah Gray.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Chris, what are your thoughts?
I really don't know what to make of him yet. He's right. The Nationals development has not been good. And that's my concern. And young pitchers always have an adjustment period. We've seen that time and time again. It takes them a little while. And so I don't have a single share of him for this season for redraft. But I think long-term he'll be okay, but for redraft, I'm kind of out. I don't want to get into it because I don't know. Like, I feel like he's a pitcher that we could be dropping, you know, a month or two into the season just because there is still some downside, I think. While there is immense upside with his profile, I'm not sure he hits that this year. So for redraft leagues, I think I'm just avoiding him. I prefer to go that way rather than I'd rather bank on somebody like Lizardo than Gray personally.
Yep, totally agree. I would definitely rather have Lizardo as well.
Oh man, I'd rather. I get it because exactly what I just said. You'll know earlier or not.
Yeah.
If I had like a draft and hold, it's Josiah Gray. But yeah, I think you're kind of right. If you want to see what happens early with Jesus Lizardo, I get it.
Yeah, 12. I think 12 teamers. I think it's definitely Lizardo for sure. All right, moving out of the NL East here over to a couple more names here in the National League. The one name we had in the NL Central that is a very buzzworthy name this draft season, that's Aaron Ashby of the Milwaukee Brewers. Last year, pitched mostly out of the bullpen, had a 4.55 ERA, but a lot of that was, you know, his blow up the last game of the season, which completely screwed me in my home keeper league head-to-head championship round. But that's a story for another day. I'm not bitter or anything at all. But the stuff was definitely there. Overall, had a 29.3% strikeout rate. All the ERA indicators were a run to a run and a half below his actual ERA. Slider, very, very impressive pitch. Exceptional pitch. Batting average against under 100. Whiff rate above 40% there. Overall, the whiff rate was 29.6%, well above league average. Same thing with the chase rate. So a lot of intriguing stuff there in the profile of Ashby with the sinker, slider, changeup mix. ADP has been kind of up and down, but right now it's right in the mid-200 range, around 250 or so. Are you buying into Aaron Ashby as a breakout arm this year, Nick?
Yeah, 290 ERA and a one whip if you take out the last start.
Yeah, I'm not bitter or anything. Yeah, it just cost me a championship. It's okay.
Well, you know what? You did that to yourself. Okay. I'm kidding.
No, I did. I totally did.
But seriously, with Aaron Ashby, it's a lot of what I'm just talking about with Josiah Gray. I think actually the shortened season hurts Ashby a lot because I'm as big of a fan of Aaron Ashby as anybody when it comes to Aaron Ashby, the starter. There's a story of me having a pitcherless meetup in Boston this year. And then while we all got dinner after, I literally have his game from that day on my phone at the table as I was talking. Because I'm just so enamored by him. I mean, one of the best sliders in the majors. 96-97 on the fastball with a good sink on it. That's going to get tons of grounders. and a changeup he can throw for strikes as well. Like, he was confidently throwing sliders and changeups in the zone from the get-go, and it's really cool to see that. It's free real estate, guys. The big problem is that Milwaukee has five starters. I mean, it's that simple. And I do expect at some point Aaron Ashby to be the first one to get the opportunity. How long do you want to wait for that? I don't know. I mean, I can understand Aaron Ashby shouldn't hurt you unless you're going against the Dodgers in the last game of the season for Eric Cross's team. So you should be fine putting him as your middle reliever, but that's a valuable draft spot. There's no more valuable, a bench spot than April. It's without a doubt the most important one. So I don't know how long I'm going to wait for that. And then keep in mind, it's not just when he enters the rotation. It's going to take about 3 weeks or so for him to ramp up then, to go from 2 innings to 3 innings to 4 innings. You know, eventually we'll get to that 5, maybe. And then it could be 4.1 in the next one. It's going to take time. He's going to be camp counseled, as I like to say. So I am out again for 2022 because that means I have to draft Aaron Ashby. Now, you might get lucky where the person who drafts Aaron Ashby is sick of it and drops him. And that could very much happen. If that's the case, just be hyper aware of whatever's going on in Milwaukee. And the second that someone goes down, Ashby is the call. Don't do it for a spot start. It probably will be a 2-inning opener role. It won't actually be as a member of the rotation. But if someone actually gets hurt for a significant amount of time, Ashby's the guy, and then I'm stoked. But yeah, I'm not drafting him because of that. It's just too valuable of a bench spot to give up right now.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. If he had a rotation spot, I would be much more confident in drafting him because, yeah, I'm definitely enamored with the stuff, as you mentioned. I can't do it without the rotation. Same thing with, you know, a guy we'll talk about a little bit later, Tanner Houck. And I love Tanner Houck. But what's the role start of the year? We don't know. So it kind of makes it hard to draft him where he's going, even though the talent is definitely there. And Milwaukee's recent track record of developing arms is very, very encouraging, which also helps a lot. But yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I'm out right now. It's because of the role uncertainty. Chris, what about you?
Yeah, I agree. You can't draft players that don't have roles. I mean, in the late game, sure, like the last round target, maybe. But he's going a little early for that. So I just can't invest that kind of pick into where he's going and not be guaranteed starts. For what it's worth, you mentioned the last start. His MLB debut also hit just two-thirds of an inning. He allowed 7 runs, only 4 earned, but 3 walks. If you take out the MLB debut and that last start against the Dodgers, 30.1 innings, 1.78 ERA, 33% K, 5.2% walk, 35% CSW. So pretty elite. I know he's got elite stuff. We know that. We've discussed that, but the role is a big factor. Dynasty leagues, buy in. 2022, not so sure. I'm not sure he's worth the draft cost.
For a quick D&D crossover, it's a critical role for Aaron Ashby. And you guys don't get it, and it's fine.
I don't play D&D, so I don't get it.
it's a good joke.
But those stats that Chris just mentioned without the beginning and end just got the chef's kiss from Mr. Nick Paul, including that 35% CSW. Oh. Yeah, so beautiful.
He's just so good.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement. Very good arm, but the role kind of makes us shy away for this year. At least the last arm I wanted to get Nick's take on here in the National League is a guy that I've always been kind of enamored by out west with the Dodgers, Mr. Tony Gonsolin. Walk rate really ballooned last year to levels that he never showed in the minor leagues, but has that really good splitter slider combination. Both of which have had a whiff rate above 40% each of the last 2 years. Batting average against was under 120 for both, but the four-seamer gets hit hard. Allowed 6 home runs last year in 432 thrown, .298 batting average against, .564 slug. Hasn't really had a chance to really establish himself as a starter because obviously the Dodgers are always loaded in the rotation. But this year, you know, it could be the year. Currently, he's projected as their number 3 behind Walker Buehler and Julio Urias. They also have Andrew Heaney, David Price, but you know, who knows what you get out of David Price. Heaney's still a question mark as well. There's still others that we shall not name that are in the mix as well. Who knows? But looks like he could be in the rotation to start the year. And so, Nick, are you buying Tony Gonsolin to break out this year?
So this is probably the guy I'm most conflicted on. Because I don't know where I stand on a very important question. And I'm sure you don't know what that question is. will his slider get 65% plus strikes or not? In 2020, it was a 71% rate. And in 2021, it was 52%. And the impact of that means that you all of a sudden need to throw more four-seamers. That, you know, that's essentially the thing that guys will then sit on and hit. And that's why I think you had that 136 whip. Obviously, the walk rate goes up 14% to 14%. You're throwing fewer strikes. I mean, that's just the case. Strike rate went down on four-seamers as well, 5 ticks. Splitter went down 3 ticks, down to 58. But traditionally, you don't see a high strike rate on splitters. You just see those as O-swing machines, which it wasn't. Kind of weird, 90% swing strike rate, but just a 26% O-swing. So it's all very strange to me. And the biggest issue among all of this is that, yeah, he's not throwing enough strikes, but the batting average then went up to 298 on the four-seamer. And what's crazy...
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The hard hit per PA, that is the hard contact allowed on sliders and splitters, super low. I mean, among all starting pitchers, Gonsolin ranked 11th in hard contact allowed, which is exceptionally good. Like, insanely good. But it's probably because he didn't throw enough strikes and he just walked too many guys. Hard hit per PA is all about per plate appearance. So if you take away, I don't know, 8 ticks of the walk rate, you know, down to like 6% or so, maybe that goes 5 ticks of PA to like getting hard contact, and all of a sudden it's 25%. He's not nearly as exceptional. So just a quick note about that with hard hit per PA on our site. It's a great stat, but just keep in mind how much of K's and walks are involved in those plate appearances. Gonsolin has to throw more strikes with the slider. It's that simple. If he can do that, whip improves dramatically. He allows fewer hits on the fastball. Then his strikeout rate can stay 25% plus. But I don't know if I buy that. And that's the tough call. I will say the Dodgers should be relying on Gonsolin above Price or any other options that you would consider close to Gonsolin. So yeah, he should have a rotation spot. Maybe it's more in the limited role, like 4 to 5 innings, as opposed to trusting him for 6 or so. Yeah. But I kind of want to take a chance. Maybe that slider is doing great out of the gate. I can feel really good about it. I kind of don't think he's going to get the same slider from 2020, though. And that makes me feel not so great about Gonsolin.
Yeah, he's definitely going to be intriguing for sure. And I totally agree. Like, they know what they have with David Price at this point. Like, Price is better, probably like long relief, kind of mopping up one of the starters goes, you know, doesn't go, you know, deep into their start. So I want to see what they, you know, I think it's time for them to figure out what they have with Gonsolin. Either he's going to be a pretty good starter long term, or maybe he's, you know, maybe he's more of a bullpen guy, who knows. But definitely very intriguing. Chris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a huge make or break here for him. I kind of echo everything you said already, but at the current price tag going after pick 300, I do think he's worth a gamble, kind of like Jesus Luzardo, where the value isn't low enough where I think you can invest and see where it goes. But I don't know. He's a tough one. I've liked him in the past before, but you know, just how the Dodgers manage pitchers, who knows? They could manage him a lot of different ways. For all we know, they could go out and trade for somebody. They could sign a huge name immediately. Like, that rotation could get filled and he get bumped out quickly. And so that's my concern, because the Dodgers do what they do best, and that's go out and buy players. I mean, we've seen them do it time and time again. And that's my fear, is that he gets bumped out of the rotation. Maybe he could benefit from a trade to somewhere else. Like, I don't know if that's even in the realm of possibility, but, you know, it would be something to consider. Now, last year, you mentioned, can he go deep enough? He was really good the first and second time through the order, but he never – I mean, he only pitched one inning the third time through the order, which is a huge concern, and he allowed 2 earned runs. So the only time he went – saw a lineup the third time through – it was an inning and 2 earned runs, and that's not ideal. But the first 2 times of the order were really, really good. So that is worth noting. Maybe he is just a 5-inning type guy, which could hurt his value a little bit.
Yeah. If I'll take him in Boston, to be honest with you. But Yeah, if he gets bumped out of the rotation before Andrew Heaney gets bumped out, I will be incredibly upset. I just got to say that. Yeah, so
Andrew Heaney is not going to work out, guys. Just so we're clear.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't understand.
It's not going to work.
Everybody's always Robbie Ray, apparently. But
No. That's the wrong. It's wrong.
That's everybody's
the
popular
real,
take.
The real Robbie Ray answer is Patrick Corbin. Which I don't believe in. You have to understand, the Robbie Ray thing is an exception. And every year there's always a new thing. Remember when it was Shane Bieber and Tyler Glasnow?
Yeah,
Who's the new of them? I mean, it's every year.
That's a popular thing. And everyone's like, oh, who's the next Cedric Mullins? And yeah, those are fun things to write about. But people have to realize, it doesn't happen often. Someone going from, pick 500 plus to a 30-30 guy, or going from Robbie Ray, who couldn't throw a strike, to someone that had a 6% walk rate.
Right. He just said, screw it, I'm going to throw in the zone now.
Yeah,
it was great.
That doesn't happen all the time. These are exceptions to the rule.
Andrew Heaney throws too much in the zone, so there's a difference.
Andrew Heaney is just not good and got ruined by the atrocious Angels development org. That's my take. They have not had a good track record of developing.
Inconsistent curveball and changeup. If he ever actually had those consistently, because I think actually his fastball gets laced because people know it's coming a lot.
Yeah.
But it's actually not that bad of a heater if he gets good secondaries that are consistent, but they're not. So that's it.
All right. Enough about Heaney. We're going to take a quick break here, come back on the other side, and get into some very intriguing pitchers over in the American League. So don't go anywhere.
Hey, MEAC fans, it's time to step into a championship. The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the ME action with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
All right, welcome back. Let's get into the American League now. We'll start in the AL East with my Boston Red Sox and two of the more intriguing names in Boston Red Sox world here for fantasy purposes this year have been Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock. You know, Houck, the longtime top pitching prospect for Boston, who is just absolutely nasty. He's been comped as the right-handed Chris Sale, which is a little extreme, but I get it. And then Garrett Whitlock, who the Red Sox got from the Yankees in the Rule 5 draft a couple of years ago. Thank you, New York. I will thank you guys forever for giving us Garrett Whitlock. And he was really, outside of Eovaldi and Pivetta and Sale, you could say Whitlock was their third or fourth best and most consistent arm last year. But the role of each of these guys is very uncertain to start the year after the Red Sox brought in Rich Hill and Michael Wacha. So right now, neither one are predicted to be a starter, so who knows? But the breakout potential is definitely there for both. Nick, are you buying into either of these two this year? I know it's hard to say without the role being known at this current point in time, but then again, is Rich Hill going to stay healthy? Is Michael Wacha going to stay healthy? So I can see Houck getting a start, getting into the rotation sooner rather than later, but are you buying into either of these two guys in 2022?
So not Garrett Whitlock. I haven't really thought much about Garrett Whitlock because I thought it was just not a chance that he breaks camp inside that rotation, and not even just in the rotation, but definitively in that rotation, because there's a big difference. And I think this is something I overlook a ton, is if you are the number five guy for a proper ball club. And I mean by that is one that isn't just whatever, who's throwing on Friday, don't care. Like the ones that actually go, okay, cool, we're going to look at our schedule, we're going to see if we're going to get an extra start for this guy or whatever, especially around the season. A lot of teams just skip that fifth rotation spot. For the first 2 weeks or so, you might have a bullpen game. You might even have just a four-man because they have off days or so. It's really frustrating to be such in the dark right now about the schedule. But so if you have a guy like Houck and or Whitlock, those are the young guys that they always want to hold back a little. So it does mean that you probably won't get a start early from Houck if he does earn that fifth spot, which he should. Let's be honest here.
Yes.
Rich Hill.
Agreed.
Rich Hill's the number four. Fine. That probably won't last a while.
He's also 56 years old, too.
Yes. Going on. Actually, I think it's 58. But anyway.
Okay, my bad.
Michael Wacha is not going to confidently start for this team. I would be shocked. Maybe he's throwing 95 consistently with that changeup. That's only times when he was successful last year, but he was still only would do it for like five innings or so. Garrett Whitlock, I watched before the show just a bit more to get more familiar, and I do like what he does. I love the fact that he throws elevated four seamers as a strikeout pitch at like a 20% swing strike rate on those, but it was only 10% usage. But I thought that was really, really cool. Good looking slider as well. Changeup is bad though. Oh man, why are you throwing that pitch, Whitlock? But Tanner Houck, I think, is more complete. Right? It's a slider that misses a lot of bats, 36% CSW, but 60% strike rate, and I was really surprised about that. Not as consistent as I'd want it to be. Four seamer sinker, otherwise a splitter. Is that really going to be a thing for Houck? I don't think so.
Yeah.
And it spells a guy that isn't ready to soar. And I know that you see the 30% strikeout rate and you think, oh my God, if only we had all these innings. I don't really think that Houck is going to turn into a six inning guy. And that's something to consider when you see those high strikeout rates. Let's say Houck settles at a 25%. It's only a five innings per start. And if you have a guy at 24%, but he's going six innings per start, that's essentially, what, 15% more strikeouts you're getting from the guy that goes an extra inning, right? That was quick math. I don't know. Something close to that.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah. So there's something to be just heavily consider about that. And how, to me, I'm interested because I think that the Red Sox will allow him to start, and I think he will be beneficial. Like his four-seamer slider is enough, honestly, to be good. It's just how much are we going to get out of it? There's a headache involved of just when is he starting that I'm kind of out on both of these guys. I feel like they're a lot more fun pitchers to take in those 50s for me. And then if I am going to get someone, it's probably going to be a little bit later, like an Eric Lauer, if you can believe it, that I'm more interested in starting consistently early on.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. Like, I love Tanner Houck. You know, as a Red Sox fan, I've watched almost every one of his starts here over the last couple of years. Yeah, he's just filthy. Like, that slider, I think, is one of the best sliders in baseball.
If only he threw for a strike more.
Right, I know. Yeah, that's the issue. He can miss bats with it all damn day. Oh, but yeah, the strike rate is not very high on it. But yeah, I think overall, maybe he's a guy that doesn't have the greatest ratios because he hasn't really shown that consistent third pitch. Like you mentioned, the splitter. It's shown that when he's on with it, it's pretty good. Like, it has the ability to be, but it's just so infrequently that he's on with it. That's the issue. So, definitely love the stuff long term, but the role, yeah, I'm with you there. I don't see, especially as ADP. Like, if he was going like around where Lizardo and Gonsolin are, for instance, I'd be more willing to buy into that. But he's going like, I don't know, 100-ish picks ahead of them. It's just too high for me. I love Houck, but I don't think I have any shares of Houck this year.
You want to know something that's kind of crazy? Sorry, I've meant to mention this before. Houck's sinker has more vertical drop than Logan Webb's.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean,
so there may be something to that if he uses it right. He has a 42% O-swing on that sinker because of it.
Yeah.
There's something to it.
It's a great sinker, yeah. I didn't realize it had more vertical drop than Webb's, though. Wow, that's something, but... But yeah, Houck is nasty. Just, you know, needs the role. Chris, are you in on either of these two Boston arms here?
I'm not. And Houck's going into the top 200 now, which is just too high. There's
it's
no
way too high
for a non-guaranteed role, and for a pitcher that has not been great the second time through the order, much less the third time through the order. Not sure how much we count on him as a starter long term. I have concerns. Like, can he be a true starter that goes six innings consistently? I don't know. Or is he more of a Blake Snell type who can go through the lineup twice, but not much more? And he's consistently throwing five innings. I don't know. It seems to me like he could be an elite, like, fireman type role, maybe an elite. Both Whitlock and Houck could fit that, like, high leverage bullpen role very, very well. I think it'll be interesting. I mean, Whitlock's just, in my opinion, it's a small sample of what we've seen because, I mean, the Yankees basically just like handed him over to the Red Sox and was like, here you go, which surprises me. But I'll be curious with Whitlock this year, how he performs. I think Houck is going to be good, but it's just going to be not enough innings to be worthwhile for fantasy, in my opinion.
Yeah. Like I said, if he was going 100 picks later, I'd be all in on Houck. I just can't use a top 200 pick on him because, you know, that's probably what your fifth-ish starter when an uncertain role. That's just too high for me.
Would you take him or Lizardo straight up?
Straight up?
Straight up.
For this,
I want Houck.
Okay.
For just this year?
Yeah, just this year.
All day. Yeah, I probably lean Houck too. I think it's close.
I'd take Lizardo.
I love Lizardo. Everyone knows that, but I think I would lean Houck.
The percentage of success of like this working out is way higher to me for Houck. Okay. I think there's a lot more. Also, I think the floor is way higher with Houck too.
That's fair.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Absolutely. Just want to see him develop that splitter or develop a changeup, something. I would love to see a consistent third offering from Tanner Houck. But
yeah, he's got 2.5 pitches because of that sinker, I think.
Yeah, the two different fastballs. Yeah, so I just want I really appreciate good changeups. You know, I really do. So yeah, Chris Sale's got a great change. Maybe I know he's a lefty. Maybe he can teach.
His changeup was worse last year. Oh, man.
Yeah, it was.
It bothered me so much. Dude, get it back. It used to be like a 40% CSW pitch. It was like 25. Like, what are you doing?
40% is just, that's mouthwatering right there. Yeah,
it was insane.
All right, moving down the East Coast here to a couple Tampa Bay arms here with the same first name. I wrote up both these guys in the same article about a month or a month and a half ago. That's Shane McClanahan and Shane Boz of the Tampa Bay Rays. Two arms that I absolutely love. You know, Boz is arguably the top pitching prospect in baseball last year, got in three starts and dazzled in those three starts. 2.03 ERA, 0.68 whip with a 36.7% strikeout rate and a 35.3% whiff rate, 30.2% chase rate. Just all very good numbers. They are obviously only in three starts, but the long-term outlook for him is very promising. And then Shane McClanahan last year, 25 starts, 3.43 ERA, a little bit higher whip, 1.27, 7.2% walk rate, 27.3% strikeout rate, but did get hit hard. Four-seamer was atrocious last year. Changeup equally as atrocious, but can miss bats. He was, like I mentioned, he was one of, he was only 0.1% away in the whiff rate of being one of three arms with three different offerings with a 40-plus percent whiff rate, the other two being Dylan Cease and, of course, Corbin Burns, obviously. So the stuff is there for both these guys. Are you buying both these guys, Nick, is taking that next step here in 2022?
It's kind of funny. You said Shane McClanahan changeups. Like, changeup? Oh, right. That thing.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's actually not so bad. It's just it got pretty unlucky last year with over a 400 BABIP, but I don't think it got hit hard too often. It's just not really the dependable thing that he really wants it to be. It's like 46% strike rate. But curveball and slider earn tons of strikes, are really, really good, and are being thrown about 50% of the time right now. And I think McClanahan can turn into someone that throws at 60% of the time while throwing four-seamers closer to 30-35%. Because, yeah, that's the area of improvement. You hit the nail on the head, in my view. 41% hard contact allowed is insanely high for the four-seamer, which you want it closer to 30%. That's kind of like the norm. If you can do it close to 20, you've got it done. So I hope that McClanahan can get better command with it, or at least use the breakers to help keep guys off of the heater, and it's more of a surprise pitch. But the thing is, that slider and curveball, they're insanely good. 43% CSW on his curveball alone is startling, and a 22% swing strike rate on the slider. I think there's so much promise in that, and I think the Rays will do everything they can to make that four-seamer better than the 308 average allowed last year. So McClanahan, I think, does take a next step. And Shane Boz, as far as innings, we were kind of expecting them to do the, you know, follow the blueprint of McClanahan, come up in April and ramp up a bit eventually to six innings and ramp back down, kind of like a bell curve through the year. I think one of the pitchers that benefits the most from the shortened season is Shane Boz, because the Rays will just bring him up right away. You know, as far as his service time and all that kind of stuff, it changes, and also workload, it changes. And I'm, again, saying May 1st, I think Boz will be up with that team, considering also they don't really have a strong rotation at the moment. It's just McClanahan and friends. so Boz is needed there as their number two. And then maybe, I mean, he won't be there too. It'll probably be Kluber. Then there's some Patino in there. Then there's some Rasmussen and some Yarbrough and whatnot. But yeah, it's going to be the Shane show. And they should just call it a dirty Shane and be on with it. So I'm excited for both. I'm actually a little intrigued more so with Shane Boz, because it's an amazing slider and four-seamer. And like, it's just dominant. And also really smart and confident with them. Will throw both at any moment. And I saw that in the debut, and it freaked me out as I did a video covering like every pitch for 40 minutes or something stupid. So I'm a huge fan of both, but I find myself drafting both of them whenever I can.
Yeah, same here. I have several shares of both these guys. Like in my article, it was glowing reviews of both. Like I love Shane Boz. Like interviewed him back right in the beginning of the pandemic a couple years ago, and everything he said he wanted to do, like, you know, being more simplistic, throwing more strikes, improving his overall, you know, arsenal outside of that fastball and slider, he did. Like he improved the curveball, he improved the changeup. It's not a great changeup, but it's at least serviceable. So yeah, I am very much in on both these guys here. Like I said, just want a better fastball from McClanahan, as we kind of both mentioned here. Chris, which one of these guys are you more in on, or are you in on both?
Yeah, I like both. Do you think McClanahan's problem with the four seam is just he throws it for strikes too often? Is that
Yeah, it could be that. He has a 57% zone rate. That absolutely could be part of it.
Yeah, that's what I found interesting. I think he just grooves it in the zone too much, and it's kind of hurt him in a way. So yeah. I don't know if that's a real thing or not, but that was kind of my first thought on it. It's just one, he's just throwing in the zone too much. It's a little too predictable. Well, it does get some good arm sign run to it. It's like it seems like it'd be tougher to hit. He just doesn't locate it, you know, that well where it's going to hit too hard. So, yeah, I like both. I think you're right. I think the shortened season benefits both of these guys, actually. McClanahan probably is going to be on a little innings limit, maybe not hard innings limit, but now he's going to be up there closer to the league leaders, in my opinion. And Boz certainly pushes up where he should be, you know, a regular starter and not have a super huge workload limit. He'll be an interesting one to follow as far as innings this year. But, yeah, both very, very solid arms. I think Boz has definitely a higher ceiling. I think we could see him vault up into that top 10 type pitcher range, even though McClanahan has a high ceiling as well. But Boz has that tremendous upside that I think is the ceiling is higher than McClanahan's there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think McClanahan can get up to like the high end SP2, kind of like where like Dylan Cease is now. But yeah, I think Boz, like I mentioned in my article, he could be like this guy could win some Cy Youngs. I think he's that damn good. Moving over to the AL Central here, the one really intriguing name for draft purposes this year, coming out of the White Sox, Michael Kopech, former number one overall pitching prospect, just absolutely filthy electric stuff. Looks like he'll get a shot to start this year for the White Sox. And last year, mostly out of the bullpen, did make four starts, but 40 of those appearances were out of the bullpen. 69 in the third inning, struck out 103 batters for a 36.1% K rate. Obviously, the bullpen definitely elevates that a little bit, but it has the four-seamer in the mid to upper 90s, averaged 97.3 miles an hour on that four-seamer with the 212 batting average against, and gets good whiffs on that too, 31.7% whiff rate. He has, you know, slider and curveball are both, you know, slider he uses a lot more, curve and changeup are sporadic, but he's shown, you know, both of those could be pretty solid pitches as well. He showed pretty good curve and changeup in the minor leagues, so probably uses those a bit more this year than the 6%-ish combined usage rate that he had last year. So a lot of intriguing things here with Kopech. Obviously, the innings will be a question, as with most of these guys are talking about, the younger guys, but are you buying into Michael Kopech this year, Mr. Nick Pollock?
Oh, man. Oh, I'm so, so ready for Michael Kopech to be in the conversation of everybody else.
I like that answer.
To me. It's crazy. So I'm doing these going deeps every morning, right? And I do, and I have the PL Plus crowd. They vote on who I'm doing. And Kopech was number three. So I did this yesterday morning. So that's Saturday morning. And I say, okay, you know what? Let's go find some quotes, some news about what is going on with Michael Kopech. And NBC White Sox beat writer Vinny Duber put this out at the end of November and says, quote, Michael Kopech is being elevated to the rotation for next year after throwing out of the bullpen in 2021. Straight from his article. Okay. And going more into it, there is a mining in the news from Jordan, Jeff Sermon's amazing article. I want to say Jordan. Oh, my. and that was earlier in the month. And they're talking about Kopech's workload. And there's something from James Fegan on The Athletic suggesting that Kopech's possible role might be as an opener in 2022. However, the context of that quote is that used as an opener sometimes to ease him into the rotation, which isn't a problem now because we're starting on May 1st. We don't need to limit his innings. We don't need to ease him into this whole thing. We've got it. It's here. And the White Sox rotation right now is two great guys and maybe one extra great guy in Lynn Giolito and Dylan Cease. And then it's Keuchel and Renato Lopez. And maybe there's Garrett Crochet. And actually, this James Fegan article was about Crochet being behind Kopech. And they're saying, hey, Crochet, you're going to be competing for a rotation spot. So this is all for Kopech to win. And it's his. It kind of reminds me of like Zach Gallen throwing all these innings. And then they said, yeah, he needs to earn his rotation spot. Like, what are you talking about? Kopech is ready to dominate. And he does it. I mean, he throws hard. He has a filthy slider. He has intent to elevate with that four-seamer. He had a 15% swing strike rate alone on his four-seamer, which is insane to me. He matched his CSW exactly, 34.8. I normally round. I'm not right now because it's exactly what his slider was, too. Four-seamer and slider CSW rates. It's insane. He's amazing. Remember I was talking about before with a 41% hard hit rate for McClanahan's four-seamer? 23.7 for Michael Kopech. He is so good. And you could say, okay, he's throwing harder. He's out of the pen more. So, you know, there's a starter. He might be a little bit different. He killed it in the rotation when he had those opportunities. I'm so excited for this. We're going to be looking at ourselves in June being like, is Kopech a top 15 starter? Is he a top 20 starter? Because he's that good. And also, it's Tony La Russa, which I actually, the one element I forgot to add to this article, which was the pitches per game that go for White Sox starters is elevated relative to the rest of the league. And I think Kopech is not going to be like limited at 80 pitches or something when he starts. He's amazing. Seriously, get Michael Kopech everywhere. I paid a decent amount for him in labor yesterday because I had extra money at the end, but I had full intent to get him and I'm not upset about it. Just get him. I'm done.
Now, quick question, Nick. Let's fast forward a year. Get the old crystal ball out here. 2023 drafts. Whose ADP is higher? Michael Kopech or Shane Boss?
Right. I think we're going to have more clarity about Kopech. Okay. So I'm going to go Kopech. It's going to be very close. I've actually compared the two a lot, and I had them back to back. And I had Kopech because I think Kopech would start the year with the White Sox. I think there still is more of a probability right now for Kopech to start the year with the White Sox. I will say, I wonder whose third pitch will be better between Boz and Kopech.
Yep.
Because they're both four-seamer slider guys, and they're both really good at it. I think Boz is a little bit better when it comes to the command of it. But Kopech has the White Sox as opposed to the Rays. And when you think about player development, you think a little bit better in the Rays. But when you think about actual volume and opportunity and role, you want the White Sox. It's the AL Central on the best team.
Yeah,
it's such a good situation for Kopech.
Tony La Russa doesn't care about the new age stuff.
No, he doesn't.
He just throws his guys. Like, La Russa's old school. We all know that.
So I'm kind of thinking Kopech in 2023.
Okay, I can get behind that
a little bit.
Chris, what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I don't. Everybody's worried about innings. I mean, he has to build up, but he's shown in the past. I mean, in 2017, he threw 135 innings in the minors. 2018, over 140. That's a lot for a minor league pitcher, so I'm not overly concerned. I think 150 is certainly attainable. If he throws 150, he could strike out 200 guys. I think that's in the realm of possibility, so the arsenal is definitely there to do it. They just have to let him go, and it seems like that they are going to be willing to just let him go and do his thing, and if they do, I think we're looking at a huge, huge return on investment here in Michael Kopech.
When are you're looking at – oh, man, I can't believe I'm going to say this. When you're looking at your player pool, wondering if you should be getting Michael Kopech, you should be saying, MK. Get it. It's MK.
It's good South Park joke there.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Hi.
That was great. Thanks, Nick.
That was a good joke, Nick. I applaud you on that. I applaud you.
Oh, man. The sass coming from Eric. Okay.
No, no sass. No sass. I applaud you. I applaud you. I just didn't expect it. Caught me off guard a little bit there, but good. It's a good joke. We're kind of running long here, so I'll group these together as like a blanket statement here. A lot of, you know, young arms have come up over the last year or two in Detroit and Kansas City. We know our buddy Michael Semien is very much not on Tariq Skubal, but, you know, with the Skubal, Mize, Manning in Detroit, you know, guys like Lynch and Coar and other Brady Singer in Kansas City, anyone of this group here, Nick, are you like, is anyone that you're just still pretty much in on, or Are these all kind of guys you're avoiding this year?
So in Kansas City, the only ones that have intrigue are Daniel Lynch and Carlos Hernandez. Lynch has a really nice slider that we saw come out sometimes. But, you know, I think he got kind of messed up like going into the majors, and I don't think Kansas City is very good at pitching development in general. Too many sinker slider guys, as Eno was saying yesterday. I mean, I'm curious about that. Carlos Hernandez has two breaking balls that are good, and it's just about command with him, and maybe that does come to fruition, but I'm not really chasing any of that. In Detroit, I wrote about Mize already and just pretty much being like, what else can he really do? Maybe a splitter to righties that had some success last year, but it's not really something I want to buy into. It's Tarik Skubal. I apologize. I think last year, it's very rare for us to actually witness development and see it actually take place. And I think of all those guys, Tarik is the one that constantly is improving and changing and tweaking and always getting better. And I very much understand Michael's take, because you look at last year and it's like, this isn't a finished product. It absolutely isn't. But I think he did show signs in the middle of the year before he got shut down, where Tarik is like, oh, cool, slider and changeup are coming along, and I think these can get better. And it's something over time that I think Tarik Skubal does improve, and constantly it will reach the point of clearly the best one of the crop here in Detroit. So I have him around like the late 50s, early 60s or so. I have not found myself really in situations where I'm grabbing Tarik Skubal, just because I will take Waskari Noah or John Means or something instead, yep. And then Skubal goes, right? But I would not be upset having Skubal on any of my squads for this year. It just hasn't really fallen into my lap yet.
Chris, you buying any of the Detroit or Kansas City arms this year?
Not really. I haven't found myself drafting any of them. I'm not a big Skubal fan. I like Mize, but Mize just doesn't strike out enough batters to be super fantasy relevant. Even though he was solid last year, especially down the stretch, I just don't think the strikeout numbers will be there. Kansas City, I don't know. They've just done a poor job of developing these top pitching prospects. So I'm not really in on any of them, particularly for fantasy purposes.
Yeah, I'm kind of there with you. I still think, you know, Mize is fine. I always kind of thought this when he was a prospect too. Like, I think he could be one of those guys that has a long major league career, but not anyone we're ever like super excited about drafting for fantasy. Like, I think best case scenario, maybe he's Kyle Hendricks 2.0, even that might be a little high, but he never, even back to when he was, ace at Auburn, the number one overall pick, like he never had like a super high strikeout rate or anything like that. He's more of a limit hard contact type. And I don't know. I'm not really excited about any of these guys. I've been taking some shares of Daniel Lynch, you know, in draft and holds, a couple of shares of Manning, none of Skubal remember.
Manning, no. No,
well, it was like super, super scarred. Late.
No, I know. I'm just messing around. Four seamers can't. If a four seamer can be a 95 mile per hour pitch, there is some hype there. But that was me like groaning out of disappointment.
Yeah. No, same here.
Matt Manning.
Yeah. I was super high on Manning. I saw him live back in 2019 in AA. Was very impressed. He had a great start. Drove 3 hours to see it. It was back to back with Casey Myers, so I was down there for 2 days, but in Hartford, Connecticut. But yeah, Manning has not lived up to the hype. That's easy to say there. All right, moving over to the AL West here, our final division, and one really intriguing name for draft purposes this year out of the Angels is Patrick Sandoval, who is the owner of one of the most beautiful changeups that you ever will see. And Nick's facial expression, I think he agrees with that sentiment. Just absolutely filthy, dominant, all those words. Any word you can use to describe that is along those lines. He earned it. 139 batting average against last year. The 51.4% whiff rate. It's just insane. Also has a four-seamer, sinker, slider, curveball that y'all uses at least 10% of the time. So he mixes his pitches well. There's a lot of hype on Sandoval right now, Nick. Are you buying that hype?
All right, so I wore my 32 whiffs shirt yesterday. I couldn't wear it today, which is Patrick Sandoval whiffing 32 batters against the Mariners, and it was so wonderful. It is an amazing changeup. 29% swing strike rate for the season on just a changeup is startling, to say the least. Slider is a wonderful pitch as well, 34% CSW, good strike rate, all the fun stuff that you want to see. It's a very, it's a wonderful supporting cast in that way. Only 60% usage, and I was a little surprised by that. and sometimes he didn't necessarily have it, has a curveball that's a show me pitch. I mean, we're talking 91% early in the count he throws a curveball. And that is 91% of the time he throws curveballs, it comes within 0-0, 0-1 or 1-0, which is insane. That's hilarious to me. But it had a 36% called strike rate, which is as elite as you'll find. So with those three secondaries, things are wonderful for Patrick Sandoval. The problem is that the four-seamer and sinker are not so great. Four-seamer doesn't find strikes enough. Same with the sinker. They don't really do a whole lot. And it's kind of a hope for him to sneak in while mixing in these excellent secondary pitches. So he's kind of a classic Guardians pitcher in this way, where he hasn't yet elevated his slider to be a 25% usage or 30% usage. Instead, he's only at 16%. So for me, I'm kind of looking to Sandoval to stop throwing these fastballs over 40% of the time. I want him to kind of do it 30% and then use curveball, sliders, and changeups to 70% of the time otherwise. And I think there's something to be had there. Huge question mark is health. He's healthy now. It's been reported that he's totally fine and ready to go. But back injury last year is a big question mark if that's going to be a thing. And he's a Los Angeles Angel, which, of course, just means you're destined to get hurt. So I like Sandoval. I think actually his quality per game is going to be good. It's just a matter of how much are we actually going to get with him. And I've seen him go, I don't know, close to Kopech or something like that. I'm like, not a chance. I'm taking Kopech every time. Absolutely. So that means I actually haven't had too much Sandoval quite yet. But I think I got him. Did I get him in TGFB? I don't even remember anymore. It's been so long that we've been drafting.
I know. And so many drafts overall. It's kind of hard to remember who you have in what league.
I got Kopech and then Sandoval. So
nice.
At least I got both there. But so I'm a fan. I think he's great with that changeup, but I still need to see a little bit more development to really buy in.
Yeah, and the ADP it's fair. It's right around 200 overall.
So good there.
Yeah, oh. That's fair. So yeah, I do have a couple of shares of Sandoval myself. Chris, you buying in?
Yeah, I do like the price. I don't think it's, I mean, going around pick 200, him and Jordan Montgomery both sitting around that spot. I like both guys there, even though I haven't ended up with them a lot. I don't know if I have a team with Sandoval on it, actually, even though I do like him and I like the draft cost. I don't really have much to add here. I think he's really solid profile. I'm not sure how much of a breakout we should be expecting, but I do expect him to be a solid arm in 2022.
All right, last name here I want to get Mr. Pollock's take on here. Finally, we get John Gray out of the pitching HE double hockey stick. That is Colorado. I won't swear on this pod in honor of Mr. Pollock.
Thanks for you, Eric.
Yeah, I'm here for you, buddy. But finally, we get Gray out of Colorado into Texas this year, which is a more pitcher-friendly environment than it used to be. So I think a lot of people are buying, like, all right, Gray's going to finally take that next step here in his age 30 season. He's shown flashes of what he can be getting out of Coors. So are you buying him this year in 2022?
Oh, yeah. He's a really fun one to be able to tell right away. And the best part about this is that a lot of the guys that we're considering around, I don't know, where is he going, 220 or something like that?
So actually closer to 250, 246 right now.
Okay. So a lot of them are these upside young pitchers who are competing or trying to get their fifth spot in the rotation or so. John Gray is their ace. And if that's the case, then he's going deeper into games. He is more consistently pitching. And you're going to quickly understand where you are with John Gray out of the gate. I love that. I love being able to make my decisions quickly and be able to know what I have early in the season. John Gray is a fastball slider guy for the most part. Used to have a curveball a little bit more. Pulled that back over the years. Just a 6% last year, but it used to be 15% or so, which was a good pitch, but hasn't really worked for him. But the slider is excellent. It has always been an elite offering. Four-seamer actually had moments last year where it increased its velocity to 95-96, and it was wonderful. And that was, you know, that was July times. We thought he was about to get traded, then he got hurt, and all this weird stuff. I love taking John Gray in all my drafts because I think he's going to produce right away for Texas. It's a great home park. Not too bad of a division either. I think it's just a really, really good situation for him. And yeah, there's a lot of talk about like, oh, inside of Coors and outside of Coors, John Gray was different. Does not matter to me. You take a free agent, they leave Coors. It's the consistency of how the ball moves and everything. Just throw that away. Just be happy he doesn't have to deal with Colorado anymore. More consistency overall is what we should be expecting. I'm a fan of John Gray for 2022.
I'm a fan as well. Chris, you in as well?
Yeah, you can't look at the home road splits. That's a terrible way to do it because Gray had to pitch two totally different ways, you know, at home and on the road because the ball moves so differently. And so you take that out of the equation. He's going to have to throw one way. That's crazy. He's thrown that for that long of his career. I mean, you go back and he was an elite prospect. He was elite coming into the draft. So I really expect to see Gray take a huge step forward this year. I think that's a great word to describe it is just consistency. So a consistent starter that goes deep into games. I think he's going to provide decent enough ratios to definitely be worth the draft cost. I just took him in TGFBI, I think around like 250, which I feel really good about.
Yeah. Yeah. I got him in several leagues so far. I think he's a good like SP5, SP6, something like that. Definitely feeling pretty good about Gray here in 2022. That's going to wrap us up. Mr. Pollock, thank you so much for bestowing your pitching wisdom upon all of us today. This was a lot of fun. Thanks, man, for coming on.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, guys. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah.
Everyone should definitely check out the new Pitcher List website. It is an absolute beaut. It's more beautiful than a Patrick Sandoval changeup. I knew you'd appreciate that, Nick. You know, absolutely. The player pages that you guys have are just exceptional, especially on the pitching side of things. Like I use those as much as I use like Fangraphs and Savant. So a lot of good stuff there. Everyone should go check it out. You know, get Pitcher List Plus, everything. Great stuff they got going on over there. But that is going to wrap us up today. Thank you to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. You can follow all of us on Twitter. Nick is at Pitcher List. I'm at EricCross04. Chris is at RotoClegg. And our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. And check out all of our written work at FantraxHQ.com or over on our Patreon. And join us again next time for more fantasy baseball talk. But until then, everyone take care.
Following is an actor portrayal.
With Kindley Assisted Living and Memory Care at Asbury Methodist Village in Montgomery County, you can anticipate more. But don't take our word for it.
My dad moved to Kindley and loved it. His apartment was spacious, sunny, and overlooked Parkland. It was a great comfort to me to see him always smiling and involved in the life at Kindley.
Enjoy quality on-site nursing and rehab services, too. Visit kindleyatasbury.org today. Equal opportunity housing provider.
Hey, MEAC fans, it's time to step into a championship. The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the MEAC action with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.